everyone. I'm Jen.
I'm Anthony, and this is Bottom Bracket Biking Podcast.
A couple's guide to biking. Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 19.
Yeah, today we are talking with Genesis again. This is the cold weather riding, advanced edition?
Advanced version. You got 101 last time. We're bumping up to 201.
201. So shut up and sit down. School's about to start. Hey, Genesis, how are you?
Hey, y'all. That was an awesome way to introduce this. Everybody shut up. Yeah. Your loins.
Although, I don't know how I would hear them if they weren't shut up, but whatever.
So it's anyhow, you guys don't have to shut up, but we've got some more information on cold weather riding and clothing for you.
Yeah. The last episode was actually very well received, and a lot of people were interested. It was good for me personally, so I thought, let's just grill Genesis some more. So we forced her to come and talk to us again.
If you want to go more in depth of here's why you might be getting cold, or, you know, things that you'd need for a full day outside, that's more of what we're covering today.
Yeah, if you want to use your brain and not just follow the guidelines, this is for you. But I have thought of a new question for people.
Ooh, what is it?
Yeah. Genesis, what's your favorite bike right now?
It has to be a bike I presently own.
Yes, the favorite bike that you are currently riding. And the point is that way, because people's favorite bike kind of tells a little about who they are.
That's true. Yes. Okay. That I'm actively riding would definitely be my fat bike.
Yeah.
Because without it, I wouldn't be riding much at all.
Yeah. And what kind of fat bike is that?
I've got a Farley 9.6, which is Trek.
Trek full carbon fat bike with Trek a bikes. Beautiful free hub.
Oh my gosh, 108 silky points in engagement, you guys. It is so nice.
It is a gorgeous bike.
It sounds like a swarm of hornets.
It does.
That is kind of why I wanted to talk to Genesis, because you bike every day to work, as we covered in the last episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even in the rain?
Oh yeah. The rain is the worst. Rain is the hands down worst.
Yeah, I hate rain. I don't go in the rain.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Do you ever not bike to work?
Yeah, I didn't bike to work the other day. Just because you get really sick of the winter after a while. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It gets to you psychologically. It's beating me down. Now I'm to the point where I only want to ride with friends. And if I'm riding solo in the cold, I'm forcing myself.
Yeah.
You know, once you pedal, it's like, oh, I'm fine. This is great. But getting out of the door is a pain.
I mean, a big part of that is making sure you have the right gear, too. I had, I think, 3 rides in a row that were terrible. Like, too cold one day, wrong bike another day, and then I think the other day the trails were bad. Because that's the thing, like the trails change so quickly.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
A couple hours is all it takes.
Yeah.
We've stopped switching the trail signs like opened or closed because it can be perfect at 8 a.m. and a complete mess by 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And then back to fine at, you know, 6 o'clock at night because it refreezes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But we can't fix the trails.
Mm-mm.
Well, I mean, we do fix the trails, but with a podcast, we can't fix the trails other than saying, dear God, don't ride slush.
Oh my gosh. And now we're seeing more than ever why people need to not ride slush.
Mm-hmm.
Holy.
We had a trail that turned into an ice rink. There's an ice like line down the middle. We rode it yesterday. But we can do stuff and help with the cold, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we wanted to talk about today. So everyone's kind of familiar with walking and being outside in general.
I would hope so.
Yeah, especially if you're buying a bike and going to go for a 10-mile bike ride. I hope you've been outside for 20 minutes and know what that's like. But with a bike for newer people or people who haven't biked in the winter, there are some other considerations on a bike when you're going kind of hard that you wouldn't have when you're walking. I think one of the first ones is you're going faster.
And right? What comes along with going faster?
Crashing harder.
Well, yes, but how about we let Genesis take this one?
Moving forward quicker definitely brings the wind into your face, which you don't experience as much with walking or hiking or anything like that. And having the wind constantly hitting the front of your body and your torso cools you down significantly. That's why in the summer when you ride, riding your bike actually might cool you down on those hotter days until you stop and then you're dying.
So this is where that kind of start cold idea. No, start warm.
Start warm, start time? Cold.
Start warm at your house.
Start cold.
But
yes.
Then when you are actually going, you'll be cold at the beginning.
Yeah, you're always going to be cold at the beginning. And this is one of the main reasons. Not only are you deliberately layering To accommodate your later body temperature, which we'll talk about, but you're accommodating the wind that's going to be in your face right off the get-go.
So my first reaction, at least when I started biking in the cold, was to layer up. So when I first got out there, I was warm.
I did the same thing. The first time I went out in the cold, I wore a dang ski jacket. I was miserable after 5 minutes because I was too warm.
How long does it take you to warm up usually?
Usually it takes me 2 miles, maybe three if it's a really cold day.
Yeah.
So 15 minutes, 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yep.
15 minutes sounds about right.
Mm-hmm. I kind of call that steady state where that's how much heat your body's going to be making, mm-hmm. and that's how cold it's going to be outside. So then you can really start being like, oh, I should take my gloves off, or mm-hmm. I should have put a bigger coat on and now I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Or what I've realized is I always freak out about my hands getting too cold. And if I can get through that 15 minutes, typically my hands warm up and then I'm fine. And like last time you talked about starting off with warmer gloves and then swapping them out later, mm-hmm. I've been playing around with that. And yeah, right around 15 minutes is where it typically comes up. I'm like, okay, I'm good. I'm warm now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So unless you get your temperature like perfect, you're probably going to be sweating a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why ski coats aren't great, right?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, from my experience.
They're not. Yeah. They go back to that first episode we talked about layering as an emphasis. And that's where that comes in. Really nice to be able to shed a layer and still have protection.
So should you ever have like a wind, like a, I don't know, a coat that doesn't let any air through?
Yeah. I like to bring in wind resistant layers at around 30 degrees or maybe less. If there isn't a lot of wind outside, I won't consider it unless it's like 20 below. But it's mm-hmm. different for everyone. Just finding that point where you are feeling the wind stealing your body heat from your clothing. And it just takes trial and error, really.
And it's different for everyone because like road bikers are going to have that way more than, you know, fat tire bikers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. being in tree stands definitely blocks you from the wind, so I'm more likely to wear a flannel when I'm mountain biking in the trees versus commuting to work.
Well, and a lot of times if you're in a fat bike, you're working pretty hard because there's a lot of surface contact and 3 PSI is a lot different than a road bike.
100%.
Yes.
Yeah.
You work with people every day. I guess what's kind of the biggest thing that newer bikers might not understand then about cold? Is it the forward motion type thing?
It is. There are two things that catch new cyclists who are riding in cold weather off guard. And the first is the wind in your face. They're not expecting to be colder than they would. You know, it's already cold. You walk out, it's 30. That's cold already. And then the wind on top of that catches people off guard. Also, the heating up that occurs about 15 minutes in or so catches people off guard. I was just talking to a customer at Bike World the other day about how you're going to be sweating, you know, a couple miles in, and he was shocked. And mm-hmm. I showed him how thin of layers you really need on a cold weather bike ride. And he almost didn't believe me, wanted to buy the thicker stuff. I had to beg him, just try these couple layers, go on a ride. If you don't like them, bring them back, you know, because it's definitely not intuitive how little clothing you wear in 30 degrees.
Oh, it's been freaking me out. Like, it's taken until this last month for me to actually believe that when I leave the house and it feels like I'm wearing something that I'd wear on a 50, 60 degree day for a walk.
Yes.
That's going to be fine for 25, 35 on a bike.
Yeah.
One day I was coming home from work and it was like 30 degrees out. But the sun was out, and I came back in like just a flannel.
Yes.
Because I had my light coat over it, mm-hmm. and it was too hot. But if you're not used to that steady state area mm-hmm. where you're warmed up and you're used to everything, then yeah, it's easy to way overpack clothing.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I look for when I'm riding, after I start to warm up, what I'm looking for is feeling like my skin is cold, but my core is hot. Because in that state, when you're riding and your metabolic function is at that steady state that Anthony's talking about, you are not concerned with the cold surface area of your skin. You stop noticing because your core is so warm. If you feel like once you feel that warm tingle start to come to your extremities, even just a little bit, you might feel it in your armpits or you might feel it in the back of your neck, a little warm tingle, that's when you should start shedding. If you are already sweating, shedding layers can be detrimental. So you mm-hmm. want to catch it before you start to sweat.
Mm-hmm. I think there's the other day when my legs about fell off.
Oh.
my core was warm, but I hadn't put on enough layers on my legs.
Yeah.
And I actually, when I took my leggings off, I had these bright red spots on like three or four places that stuck out in the wind. be careful. Yeah. Even doing it for a while, you still make mistakes, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one 30-degree day is different from the next. You mm-hmm. have to play each day by ear.
So, tell us a little bit about what those differences might be.
Yeah, like snowing, maybe? Or sunshine?
Snow doesn't have much impact on your comfort level. Snow is wonderful to ride in, and I would recommend it, falling snow. I would recommend it to anybody who hasn't ridden in falling snow. It's gorgeous, it's quiet, and it doesn't really get you super wet. The things that make the biggest difference are sun, wind, rain. Pretty much everything else has more to do, like the snow impacts your traction, might impact what bike you choose to ride, but it wouldn't really impact your clothing unless it's a super wet snow.
Yeah, unless you're actually getting...
Yeah, so sun and wind are what I look for in the forecast. If it's sunny and it's not windy, I'm probably going to add 5 to 10 degrees in my head, knowing, oh, I won't need that extra layer that I would wear if it wasn't sunny.
And if you're just kind of starting out, I would err on the side of caution, because that is where I've actually gotten into trouble. We were on that ride together when I saw you guys down by the bridge.
Yes.
Because I didn't have any long pants on. And it was sunny, and I thought, oh, it's going to be a nice day out. But I underestimated how warm it was going to be.
Yeah. Way underestimated.
Well, and then it got dark, and the sun went away, and I think that's when you really could have gotten into trouble, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was kind of cold with the sun out, but then once the sun went away, I was actually going to be in trouble real quick.
Anthony got saved. I went and got him. Don't worry. He's fine.
So, Anthony, you actually mentioned playing it safe, and I want to speak to that real quickly. That's the smartest advice anybody's ever given anybody. And especially with cold weather, just bring more clothes than you need. It doesn't hurt. As long as you are willing to shed those layers when the time comes, definitely pack an extra windbreaker, have those extra gloves. It doesn't hurt to even bring a shell, some long pants, like that are windbreaker pants or something. But as long as you feel comfortable in your mind, knowing that you're willing to take those layers off, it can become psychologically pretty difficult when you're out in 30 degrees to take your top layer off. But I promise you, if you're already warm, you won't regret it. It's an easy change, and it's always good to have more than less on your person.
And a big thing with that is maybe use a bigger backpack if you have to. That's my winter one. That's my summer one. My winter one is much larger. Specifically, so I can stuff in there.
Yeah.
If I need to.
Yeah.
I have to do that sometimes. The other thing is, don't look at people who don't do that and think, oh, I'll just be like them, because they might have 15 years of experience doing this and know exactly what they're going to do. That was another problem I had. Because I would see people who didn't have extra clothes and think, well, I don't need it.
Right.
And I would be wrong.
It's kind of like on those gravel rides when you see someone take off to do a century with like two water bottles. And you're just like, I feel like the stupidest person ever with my huge water bottle backpack and three extra water bottles on my bag. It's like, okay, you don't know what they're doing. Yeah, that was something that was hard for me to get over.
Yeah.
I think along the same lines of bring extra is also be prepared to take layers off.
Yes.
I've had a couple times where I've gone out and I've been too warm, but I didn't have anything besides my pants on. So like... if I were to take anything off, I'd just be riding around in my underwear. So a pair of shorts would have been just a game changer.
Right. It's really hard to take stuff off. Just the other day, I was commuting in. I was wearing too much. I felt that warm tingle. I started to build in my core temperature, and I thought, I'm just going to get to work. And that was the wrong choice. And then the next day, I had the same experience, and I took the layer off right away and immediately felt better. It's amazing how hard it is to just do it, but just take it off if you feel uncomfortable. Don't wait.
I mean, as long as you have stuff underneath of it.
Obviously.
And that's what I'm saying. Don't have a huge coat on and no shirt underneath, because you don't have a backup.
I'm actually really excited. So for my birthday, I just got a pair of their bike-specific leggings, but they don't have any padding in them. They're built to go over bike shorts. And that's been something that typically I'd wear my bike leggings, and sometimes I'd put a pair of pants over those, like if it's really cold. But in that in-between range, I didn't have any way to transition from leggings to shorts. And now I do, and I think that's going to make a big difference in the shoulder months.
That's a lot of information. Mm-hmm. Holy cow. How do you keep track of that? Do you do anything to keep track of that, Genesis?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. The first three seasons that I started winter cycling, I logged everything pretty rigorously. Mostly just temperature, precipitation, and then the clothes that did work and didn't work. And it's never the same from one 30 degree day to the next. So you always have to take, you can't just blindly follow your log. It's a way to learn what works for you in what situations. And every time you find a new layer that works in harmony with a certain weather forecast, then you know that's what I like to wear in that time. But just being able to reference back and say, oh gosh, it's 30 today and it's kind of breezy. What did I wear last time it was 30 and breezy?
Didn't you do that with like Strava? You would put in the mm-hmm. description?
Yeah, I do that. And I don't do it rigorously right now because I've been running about the same winter setup for most of this year. But I always go back. So every winter I have to remind myself what I kind of worked out the previous year and just build on it. And Strava does this thing where it actually will include your, like the weather, what it was like. It's gotten better. I trust it more. I used to include all of that information in the log, but then in the activity description, I'll just write in what I wore, if I was hot, if I was cold, if I have anything specific that I'm like, never do that again. And it's just a really good reference. So if I haven't gone out in a certain condition for 3 to 7 months, I can go back and be like, hey, this is good, and not have a horrible ride.
I tried to do a log, but I ended up with like a multi-dimensional array and I got really confused by it. And that's a big part of the reason why I suck at winter so much, is because every winter I have to like try to remember what I'm doing again.
Maybe simpler is better, Anthony.
Yeah. Simpler is probably much better.
Hey, Anthony, what's that?
What's what? Oh, is that the Gear Talk bell?
It is Gear Talk time.
Oh, yay. Jen, do you want to go first?
Sure, I will go first. So one of the things that we've been talking about is blocking wind and things like that. And I have a new jacket that I have been absolutely in love with, and it's actually changed how I feel about riding quite a bit. And it's a North Face Windwall jacket. It doesn't really have, like, it's got a little bit of fleece around the neck, which is nice because when I'm cold and I start out, I can, like, stick my chin down in it and kind of hide there, and it's soft and fuzzy. But otherwise, it doesn't really have any insulation. And it is awesome. That is probably my favorite piece of winter gear right now.
A light jacket type thing?
Mm-hmm. It's yeah. Just a little bit thicker than Anthony's favorite jacket. It's not quite as stretchy. I would say maybe not quite as permeable, but definitely in that like wind barrier, not getting into the evil sweaty ski coat range.
Yeah, I think those are really valuable for biking. Genesis, did you have anything you wanted to talk about?
Why, yes, sir, I do.
What? Oh, man.
Yeah, I've got something that I have just recently started using, like, all the time on the trail, and it is my hand pump. And you think, oh, what a pain. Hand pumps take so long. But this one is a high-volume hand pump, and I can use it, like, I can put, like, 5 to 10 PSI in my fat bike tire in, like, less than a minute. It's Ooh. Really doable. And it's got this awesome lever that pops out so you can get better leverage as you're pumping. It's the HV Click by Crank Brothers.
Oh, I love Crank Brothers.
Yes, and they make a high pressure one for road bikes and stuff as well, but I have the high volume and it's got a really big cartridge. I'm not sure what holds the air, but man, it puts it in there quick. Super easy to use, Presta and Schrader, and I strap it right to my bike. And because I'm always messing with the PSI in my fat bike, I'll do a commute where I go mountain bike and then I ride like 10 miles of road. So it's like 3 PSI to 13 PSI, you know, in the same ride. So I'm able to switch that pretty quick and not feel like I'm spending an hour pumping up my tire.
Yeah, and with fat bike tires, that could take forever if you're trying to use a normal hand pump. That sounds awesome.
I love Crank Brothers stuff in general, so I should probably get one of those.
Anthony, I know you're distracted by looking up that hand pump so you can buy it later, but do you have an item to talk about?
There's a review on the website that says best hand pump ... ever.
Yes, and it's got the little flexible hose so you don't have to worry about snapping your valve while you're pumping.
That's nice.
Your tire nipple.
Yes. That's right. I feel like that's wrong, though, because you already have so many nipples attached to your rim that you can't call the valve also a nipple.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Unless, that is true.
I mean, the more nipples, the better, obviously.
Well, like hydraulic fittings are called that.
Yeah, all right. That's right.
This is a good
Anyways.
Good tangent, team.
Anthony, would you like to tell us about your item for the day?
Yeah, I got this little pressure gauge literally right before we started recording. And I never realized I needed one in my life until I got one.
What type of pressure gauge is it?
Well, it's an electronic pressure gauge. And so I have been having this problem of I have a fat bike, a mountain bike, and a road bike. And if you don't know, those pressures go from negligible to 100 PSI. And like analog gauges, the kind with the little dial, they only work well in kind of the mid-range. Like the very low and the very high, they're not great at.
Mm-hmm.
So if you would want one that has a good reading, you'd have to have like three different ones. And I have one, and it doesn't match my other one at all.
So that's now nice.
I have one pressure gauge to rule them all. And it is a digital one, so it goes from 0 to 250, 225.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah. And what that means is you could use it on your shock pump, too.
Ooh, you know what else that means?
No.
It means that we can finally tell listeners what our tire pressures are on the fat bike instead of just guessing and being like, it's somewhere around 3 to 4. Because Anthony went out there and checked, and guess what, guys? It was 3 PSI.
What does your tire feel like? It feels like a rotten peach. It's like that squishy.
Mm-hmm. We have a friend who does, that's how she describes her tire pressure.
Oh, yeah?
And she's a good rider, yeah.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, oh, it's like orange.
Yeah, it's like an orange.
It's like the fruit orange? Yeah, it's like the fruit orange. Oh, my God.
That's funny.
That it stresses no Anthony out. This is funny.
Yeah. But a good oh, man, I'm so excited to use this on all my bikes. Because I didn't know what my fat bike was until just before we started this recording.
Mm-hmm. Super useful. You know, I've been letting air out of my fat tires on the fly on the trail. And then I'll find that perfect Zen PSI. And I'll go home and I'll be like, don't forget to check what you were actually running so you know what to run next time.
Yeah.
But super useful because you can just check it right on the trail with that little guy. And you don't have to worry about the glass part breaking and stuff.
Well, and on the mountain bike, we run 25 PSI, but the floor pump only goes in increments of 5.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have no idea if it's 23 or 27. It's
right.
Close enough, but it can make a huge difference. So that's why I'm really excited about it.
Also, because Anthony loves data, and now he can get better data.
Data! So, you got all that figured out. Your steady state, you know, you kind of know what you want. Maybe you'll take a layer or something off once you get there. But what if you're going for like an hour or 2 hours or, God forbid, 4 or 5 hours in the cold? Does anything, you know, does that work for the entire 5 hours or do you have to have other things to think about?
There are other things to think about. And for everybody, it's going to be different. Everybody's bodies are different. And I want to start by saying that I am not a medical specialist. So these things that we're about to talk about are some pretty predictable physiological processes that happen on during any exercise out in the cold, but it's going to vary from person to person. And if you want more information, I would recommend seeking out professional medical guidance on this. This is just basic stuff, and I'm not a doctor. So I do know that when you're riding a long time, as you ride into the hour, 2 hour mark, and your glycogen begins to deplete in your body, that your core temperature will drop significantly. And so you can expect this to happen more in the cold than it does on normal average temperature days. And as you begin to oxidize the fat in your body and your core temperature drops, you need to add more layers, essentially. And if you can manage, if you can eat throughout the ride to prevent that glycogen depletion, that will help significantly. But just expect, on a longer ride in the cold weather, hour and a half, 2 hours in, you're going to plummet in temperature, and there's not really any way to stop it.
So even if you are eating fairly consistently, it's still going to happen.
It's going to happen. And that's also because even if you've layered perfectly as you exercise, it's inevitable that you will perspire, and that built-up perspiration will start to drop your body temperature as well.
So it sounds like, much like getting the clothing dialed in initially, that you should build up to those longer rides. Don't just dive into a 3 hour ride and think, oh, I can do an hour. This will be no problem.
Mm-hmm.
It might be no problem. Mm-hmm. Or you might end up calling your BFF to say, get me the heck out of here, please.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely so important to avoid sweating and to be willing to take those layers off. Can't emphasize it enough. If you can push off sweating as long as you can, that's going to push that temperature drop back in your core substantially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always figure that if I'm too warm and I take a layer off and get too cold, well, I know that I can warm back up.
Absolutely, yeah.
So there's one thing that I wanted to say that is kind of a weird trick, and I don't know if I've mentioned this before, and that is I use my hair as a backup warmer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, sorry, Anthony, your hair is glorious, but it's not long enough to help with this. Mm-hmm. But I have started specifically when I go out, I know I'm going to have something over my head and neck usually. And so I will braid my hair just like I do in the summer, just so that it doesn't like build up on the back of my neck, mm-hmm. because that's the first place that gets sweaty.
Always.
If it does.
Yes.
And then that's also a trick of if I ever do go out and I am just overly cold,
mm-hmm.
it is really easy to take my hair out of braids and kind
push
of mass it around my
push
neck.
It in your collar, right.
And
right.
That's something that I have used. I think there's been, typically it's I forget and leave it down and then I get too warm. And so I'm like trying to deal with that. There's been one ride where it was really windy and I was out exposed, not in the woods, and I stopped and let my hair down, and it made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
So just being aware of things like that can be helpful as well.
Can we talk about the high-tech fabric now? I am actually excited about this because I feel like Genesis probably knows a lot about this. So our last episode, we avoided it to kind of, you know, run what you brung, but this time it's go out and buy the $200 shorts, show off your Learjet, and ride into the sunset. I mean, first off, though, before we get into super high-tech stuff, just getting better-fitting clothing can make a difference, right?
Oh, yes. The fit of your clothing starts really becoming relevant, especially in sub-30 temperatures.
So if you're going to err on one side, too tight or too loose, I would think too loose would be better, right?
That's right.
But as a kind of anecdote for better-fitting clothing and cost, the pants I got at Amazon for $20 fit like two trash bags.
Ugh!
The pants that I got for $200, which does not happen all the time, mind you, they fit amazing. And the fabric makes a huge difference, too. But the technical shorts I got, or pants, they work a lot better as well, I think, anyway.
Nice. Yes. Pants are huge. Are you at those pants that I wear, right? Those old man winter pants?
No.
Yes. Yes, these are the pants that we definitely did talk about last time, and Anthony decided to finally bite the bullet and go buy a pair.
Yeah, just yesterday.
So what sort of fit do you want for the best performance out of your clothes?
Well, if you're not worried about aerodynamics, which usually in the winter you're not, a little bit looser is better. You don't want something that's super loose, because then your body will struggle to heat all of the space between your skin and your clothing. What you're trying to do is maximize that space and have it be just a little bit so that your clothing and your skin are not touching in all places. Because if your pants are touching your leg everywhere, then they're going to transfer the cold from the outside to your skin. Likewise, if it's too far away, you can't heat up all that space between. So you're trying to create a wetsuit effect mm-hmm. with the air, where you have maybe just a small space that your body is able to heat and keep trapped in that area.
So you're using the airspace almost like a thermos, like an insulating layer.
That's right.
That's interesting.
Well, you're using it as an insulating layer, but in a different manner than a thermos. Mm-hmm. The thermos is a vacuum insulator, which is radiative cooling, where this is convective cooling.
Okay, Mr.
Tech Talk.
Techno. Different kind of tech talk.
It's more like a window with a nitrogen fill in the center.
Thank you, Mr. Engineer. So,
nerd!
A little bit looser than normal, but not super loose.
Right, and there is one small caveat to that. You don't want the base layers you're wearing beneath your, whatever your outside layer is, that should be lightly loose. But if you're wearing a base layer underneath that, that tighter is better.
So yeah, your base layer should be kind of tight.
Slim
right?
fitting,
so,
right.
Form fitting and then a looser layer over
that's
that.
That's right, yes.
Okay. That's your sweet spot.
And the reason for that is because if you have a loose or no base layer on a cold day, and your outer layer or your only layer is baggy, that allows the wind to sneak up underneath it.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So, again, too baggy, the wind's going to get in there. But it's really nice to have something protecting your skin and then something to trap that heat between that thing protecting you. Again, layering. Layering is your friend. You can't over layer because then you can always take something off. So don't be afraid to experiment.
I've kind of started thinking of it as like the layer that I put on. That's like, it's my keep me warm layer, which is, you know, leggings. And usually it's a form fitting wool shirt. Mm-hmm. And then I have my wind protection layer.
That's a perfect way of putting it.
And that's usually been working okay. So that's good to know.
Jen just described it in the most concise way possible.
I wouldn't pay attention. Do it again.
Oh, shoot. No, you snooze, you lose. Moving on.
That's fine.
So with that then, and I know last time we talked a bit about fabrics, but let's really go into the, you know, you're willing to put down some money to have good performance here. What do you want those fabrics to be on either or both of those layers?
Right. So this is a little bit subjective because certain people don't like how certain fabrics feel. But taking subjectivity aside, there are some general tenets that the outdoor industry likes to recommend. So that's what I'm going to be recommending here. What I have learned is one of the superior fabrics to rely on in the cold is wool. Wool is awesome for many reasons. Primarily, it is very insulating, especially when it's wet, it will still insulate. And there are very few other fabrics that'll do that. Wool is also antimicrobial, so it reduces odor buildup as you wear it, which is really nice because then you don't have to wash it as much, so you're not wearing down your expensive wool clothing in the washing machine.
That's not very high tech at all. That's like, that grows on sheep, man.
Basic.
Wait, where does wool come from? Sheep, yeah.
Yes.
I was thinking
yes.
Cotton, that's the other one.
Cotton grows on trees, wool grows on sheep, and there are different kinds of wool. So there's rag wool, which you can get from any common sheep. And the wool that you more commonly see in the outdoor industry today is merino wool. And that comes from a specific breed of sheep called the merino sheep that only live in a specific part of the world, which is why merino wool is so expensive. But really? The reason that merino wool is superior is because the fibers are longer than the fibers of a standard sheep. And so there are fewer ends of fibers poking out and tickling your skin, which is what makes nice. Rag wool so itchy. They're mm-hmm. so short that there's just a million little ends that are constantly, you know, aggravating your skin.
Where can I find these sheep?
No, we're not getting sheep, honey.
Oh, you buy the fabric from them. You don't buy it.
Yeah, you don't buy the sheep. You go and you to your outdoor retailer and you buy some nice merino wool.
I didn't know that about merino wool.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because I have had significantly more success with merino wool than just standard wool, rag wool. So what other options do you have if you either absolutely hate wool or are just looking for something else?
There are a ton of amazing synthetic options that are now on the market, and I would recommend synthetic as your second backup. Because like wool, it wicks moisture away from your skin, and some synthetics now are antimicrobial, which is really nice. It's not naturally antimicrobial. There's certain brands that have that quality. but synthetics are versatile because they come in many different thicknesses. And they have some that are quilted now in a sort of pattern that Patagonia calls, I think they pronounce it Kathleen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's essentially when you see one of those synthetic shirts that has little pockets woven into it, and that traps heat in those little pockets. And so synthetics can be super versatile.
You can keep little things in the pockets, like little pieces of rice.
Did I say things? Air particles.
No.
Little things.
No, that Anthony's coming up with that on his
own.
That's
me being an idiot.
So that sounds a lot like what we were talking about earlier, where you want the air to kind of act as an insulator. Mm-hmm. It's the same idea, right?
It is, yeah. When you see things like down and wool and poofy looking synthetics like Kathleen that Patagonia has, all of those things are just creating little pockets of air in amongst the fibers, which trap warm air. And those air pockets are what you want to encourage in your clothing. So if you are going out with wet clothing, that's why nothing really insulates when it's wet, because those little air pockets will compress underneath the weight of moisture and then can't hold warm air.
I never realized that.
So that's what happens with down. That's what happens with synthetics. That's what happens with cotton. Flat. Nothing to hold any warm air. But wool is amazing because it's rigid enough that moisture doesn't compress it.
I always heard that wool was good when it was wet, and I never knew why. That is so interesting.
That's actually makes a lot of sense. That's one of many very technical things, and I don't even know all of them, but I think that's one of the biggest.
Science, man.
So one other thing, or I guess two other things that I've heard about that may or may not be good are silk and fleece. So what would you use those for and would you recommend those?
Yeah, so silk is not used as often. It is for people who are sensitive to other fabrics. I've known of people who break out from polyester and are very irritated by wool. So silk is an alternative. Silk is also antimicrobial because it's a natural fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really nice, but it does not breathe as well as some other fibers. So if you're going to wear silk, often you find it really, really thin, and that's why. But it can feel amazing, and I've heard people speak highly of it. I've never personally used it, but it's an alternative.
Isn't it like crazy expensive too?
It is, but it does trap heat really well.
It can be. I have a pair of silk long underwear that I got 10-ish years ago now, and they're super duper thin. They're like see-through thin. And honestly, what I have used them for is if, and this was before I had good wool socks, is I would put those on and then put the wool socks over them, and they kept it from itching my legs like crazy.
Smart.
So that could be something that, you know, if you're not going out and buying everything all at once, that is an option. Or if you just absolutely hate wool, I know I've heard of some people wearing like undershirts of it.
Mm-hmm.
I have no experience with that, so I can't talk to it, but I know it's been done.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that too.
So that actually brings up one other question that we got after the last episode, and I was wondering if you had suggestions on any sort of high-tech items for that. And that would be, for our lovely ladies out there, sports bras. Because that's something.
Oh, what a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Don't wear bras. Burn them, girls.
But what if that's not an option?
Starting a revolution right here.
Oh, shoot. yeah, the bra is such a pain because you sweat. The underboob is such a sweaty area when you're working out. And the bra just loves to soak all that up and hold it for hours. So there is, like, not a great solution. There are wool bras out there, like Smart Wool has some I've seen. And wool doesn't dry super quickly, so it'll insulate when it's warm, but it's not going to, like, dry instantly like a synthetic layer will. So if you have a wool bra, you can expect it to stay damp, but the dampness will stay warm.
Mm-hmm.
Another option would be, I don't know, I haven't come up with a good one. I just recently started experimenting with Puma brand bras, and they're just a synthetic blend, but it's been working pretty well. I just recommend to ladies, experiment with synthetic bras, get away from cotton.
And if you have any recommendations, send it to us, then I will pass that on to Jen and not respond.
Outside. You're not going to start wearing sports bras?
I wasn't planning on it, but it's outside the area of my...
Ooh, Jen, what if you were to use deodorant under your boobs?
So that is something that could work because I've mentioned before that I've been having a lot of success using antiperspirant on my feet and combating that because apparently my feet will sweat no matter what I do to them. So when I was reading on that, I did see, and actually didn't pay any attention to it at the time, I did see that people use antiperspirants in other places, and underboob could be a place that you do that. Although, I know, that could be something where I'd be kind of curious to see how all that would work, because the antiperspirant that I'm using is pretty intense, and I'm not sure I would trust that on a sensitive place.
I was going to say, if you're going to try that, maybe do a test run.
Maybe just try, like, your typical... A lot of deodorants do have antiperspirant in them, and I feel like I'd be more comfortable with that than just going to a straight antiperspirant, but that's something that could work.
Oh, this is my flower boob.
Yes, lavender, or whatever you prefer, ladies.
Fresh linen, I think that's a standard one.
The not sweating helps the most with that. Again, just going back to taking off the layers, even when it seems like that's a bad idea. No, I take that back. Don't take off layers when it seems like a bad idea. Just do it when you're warm.
Yeah, when you're too warm.
So I feel like a lot of this comes down to everything is just about sweat mitigation.
It is. It truly is. Everything is sweat mitigation.
What is fleece?
Fleece is a synthetic fiber that is super thin, and it's like cotton candy fiber.
Is it like Velcro?
It's just super, super thin polyester stretched out and cotton candied into a little nest.
Okay.
And that's just a sheet of that synthetic weave that's all gnarled together. It's very interesting, but there's not a weave pattern like a normal synthetic.
I didn't know if it was like a generic term for anything that felt like a certain way or actual material.
I'm sure that there is a definition for it that I am not familiar with.
So typically fleece is something that I don't wear when I'm out riding just because it's fairly insulating. Is there a time or a place where you would use that?
You know, I have used fleece vests riding, and that works pretty well.
You know what would be a super good fur to keep you warm?
Cat fur.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
So, no, we're not suggesting you skin your cats. Our cat just came up and decided to be part of the podcast.
But if you find some wild ones.
Super cute.
We talked about Steve's glove on the last episode.
Yeah, we did.
That is a high-tech fabric that you aren't going to find.
That's not cat fur. That was, I believe, rabbit fur?
I don't know. It was some...
So back to fleece.
Yeah, so really, probably your gut instinct is right there, Jen. Fleece is so insulating that I wouldn't be relying on fleece unless it was, like, below 0 degrees. I would leave it at home, pretty much.
Oh, so it's too insulating?
It's too insulating. You'll be sweating.
Oh, I thought you were going to go not that way at all with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... Everything in moderation with thickness and cold weather riding, right? So I'd rather have 3 thin things than 1 thick fleece.
Well, and that makes sense because, like, fleeces are good if you're just walking around town and you don't have a bunch of heat being built up.
So is there anything else that you would have to say about fabrics?
Yeah, I'd say along with the fleece, avoid things like down because down will compress when it's wet from your sweat and then it won't insulate. Also, it's just too insulating right off the bat, so unless it's like sub-zero, stay away from down too, or even a synthetic puffy. Synthetic will keep you warm when it's damp, but you don't need that much insulation. Insulation, so keep it at home, or if you want an emergency, I like to keep my puffy with me just in my saddlebag. I'll cram it in there, and that way if I stop, I can put it on, or in an emergency where I'm fixing a flat, I have something that's very insulating, but I don't rely on it to keep me warm while I'm riding.
Yeah, I have a down jacket that I typically bring with me to put on when I get done with a ride if I'm not starting or stopping at home. And that's really nice because when you stop moving, when you stop generating that heat, you need something to replace it. And that's when it's really nice. And then I'm at the point where I'm not going to be sweating and getting it wet.
Yeah, that's a perfect system. Another thing that will overheat you really quickly, this may be obvious for some or a lot of our listeners, are the rain jackets. They trap heat like a plastic bag, so avoid them unless it's raining, pretty much.
Yeah, that's kind of what I do as well. You talked about having a frame or a saddlebag, right?
Yeah.
Do you have extra bags on your bike during the winter?
Way more than usual.
Really? Yes. I had not thought about that until you mentioned it.
Just pretty much for carrying clothes. Yeah. Extra clothes. I will always have that extra windbreaker with me, and 90% of the time, I'll never touch it. But the 10% of the time that I underestimated the temperature, or I'm stopping and grabbing a beer or something, yes, 100%. Baths are great.
I have a frame bag, and I haven't put it on because I didn't think I needed it.
Put it on, dude. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the extra storage would be awesome.
Yeah, and especially because a lot of times those frame bags will cover your water bottle bosses, so you can't carry water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're eliminating a water bottle, that's okay, because in the winter, you're not drinking as much anyways, because you're not sweating as much. So I usually go down to 1 water bottle in the winter anyways, and you can even fit those water bottles inside of the frame bag and still have room for the coat. So in this case, in the summer, it's hard to mitigate that water, to like say, I'm willing to lose these water bottle bosses, but in the winter, I don't find it a problem.
Well, and honestly, if you're putting it into a frame bag with a coat, it might actually stay liquid longer, too.
I bet you're right. Yes.
Because, what I've been discovering is if I carry my water bottle on my hip pack against my body as opposed to on my bike, it doesn't freeze up as quick.
Makes sense. That's awesome.
Do you only have a frame bag?
No, my favorite... So there are many types of frame bags. I don't rely only on the triangle. My favorite frame bag would be the bag that you put up near your cockpit on your handlebars called, some people call them a feed bag. It's just that water bottle shaped bag because dang, that's like the only bag that you can access on your bike while you're riding, snap a quick photo, eat while you're riding. Like it literally is so convenient. Every single other bag, you have to accommodate your riding style to access it on the bike.
Yeah. Or get off if it's like a saddlebag.
Yeah, and those feed bags, they fit a jacket. I can fit a puffy in there. I can fit
No way.
Yeah, totally. Because they're like the size of a water bottle, so it's a lot of volume, you know?
Yeah, I guess if you stuff that in there.
Yeah, I mean, I just cram it in there for sure.
Like, down things pack down really well, and if you...
That's why they're called down, right?
That's why. That's the scientific reason.
Clearly, obviously.
Yeah.
No, that's a really good idea, because if you're stopping and you want to put something on quick, or you're taking something off, but you don't want to stop for too long and cool down... That sounds like a good idea.
Well, that might be the tip of the show right there.
We'll just put that in the front.
Well, because it's something I want to do now. Like, oh, heck, I should get one of those.
You should. Yeah. They're so, and even in the summer, they're wildly convenient because of the accessibility.
No, that sounds like it could be a game changer, is just having that accessibility and the option to either bring something else with you or take something off and not have to worry about where you're putting it. Mm-hmm. If everything is about sweat mitigation, that is a really good option.
Cargo.
Because this whole time I've been struggling with, like, how am I going to bring another pair of shorts? Like, if I put a coat in my bag, it's a big old hump. And then if I put a drink or two in there, that's it. That's my day.
Totally.
So I have to decide if I want to bring a drink or I want to freeze to death. And I mean, obviously, I'm going to freeze to death.
Get some frame bags, for sure. They're the best.
So that sounds like it would be a really good option just for, I mean, heck, a 5-10 mile ride. But that could be a huge make it or break it on a longer ride, too.
Definitely. Yeah. If I'm doing a ride that's more than 20 miles in the cold, I am 100% every time bringing my puffy in my backpack or in a frame bag. And sometimes I'll even bring more than one layer because it doesn't hurt.
This conversation makes me feel so stupid because I saw my frame bag downstairs the other day and I was like, oh, I should use that. I didn't put together, like, have frame bag, need extra layer. And I bring extra layers. Like, it's not like I'm not doing that. That's such a good idea.
And it's not even for longer rides. The whole first winter I was commuting in for the first time, I always had my puffy in my backpack at the ready.
Well, that's where your oh shoot kit goes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on the flip side of that, having the extra room, because, you know, when I start off, and I think a lot of people probably do something like this, was you start too warm. And then having a place to shed that layer so that you don't just go, oh, well, I'm not going to take this off and just leave it on a tree. If you can take it off, you're more likely to do it.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Anthony's going to get real dialed in. Winter's going to be his favorite season before long.
Yeah, between my fancy new shorts that actually work in 30 degrees and having a frame bag.
And your fat bike.
Mm-hmm. And the fat bike, obviously. You can't bike in the winter without it.
No. Do not. No, we talked about that last time.
Anybody can be riding. Don't listen to Anthony. Ride what you have.
We did a whole episode on this last week. So, like, listen to that one.
That is all we have.
But if you have questions, hit us up.
Yeah, Genesis, is there anything else that, you know, you do day to day that someone might not think of, or any other tips that you'd like to end with?
Don't be discouraged if your first few attempts at finding your winter kit don't work out. It's an uncomfortable process automatically, even if you get it right. So keep trying and make notes of what hasn't worked, even more important than what has, to avoid those mistakes in the future and potentially uncomfortable situations. But yeah, keep trying. You will find it eventually. Everybody's got a perfect kit out there.
And I want to say, going off of that, don't expect it to go perfectly every time. Like, you're going to have bad rides. That's just kind of a given. We did a ride last night, and I was, by the end of it, dressed perfectly. And the first, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of the ride, I was just not having it. I was pissed off. My hands got too cold. I knew they were going to warm up again, but that didn't make them any less cold in the interim.
Are you still mad about this?
A little bit. I was very unhappy at the beginning of the ride last night. But by the end of it, it was like everything had worked out and I just had to keep riding past that. But if I had been riding on my own, I would have turned around and gone home and said, F it.
This.
I'm done for it. And just kind of expect that. And I think you have those rides no matter what the season is. But just don't have one bad ride or one bad start to a ride and give up, because it's, if you push through it, like, I ended in a really good mood last night because I got to go out and ride my bike and it worked out.
Well, that is assuming that you know that you'll be okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a ways in and you can't feel your fingers, you need to look out for yourself.
Yes. And part of that is, you know, I've been paying really close attention to my hands and my feet all winter. And so I am very aware of the fact that if my hands feel like this at the beginning of a ride, you know, they get colder in the first 5 minutes and then they start warming back up again and then they're going to be fine. But yeah, that is something that it took me a while to learn.
Yeah. And my experience is I had 3 bad rides in a row and I just wanted to throw all my bikes in the trash and give up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did an indoor ride one day, even though it was okay out, and then I was fine the next day. So don't let 2 or 3 bad rides mean that you just totally give up. Yeah. It's hard, man.
It is. Yeah. Especially because you're cold for the first 15 of the ride. Also, don't let that first 15 minutes deter you. I mean, if it's above 30 degrees, you don't have to worry about frostbite. You don't as much. You don't have to worry about as many of the pressing, potentially dangerous medical situations. So try pushing past that first 15 and you'll find almost every time that you warm up. So keep with it. Don't give up.
Yeah. Try again. Fail a lot. That's how I make my way through life.
Oh, another great thing. If you're worried about emergency situations, carry a pair of unactivated hand warmers with you. Just small, compact.
And I discovered this like last week. Phone charger.
Yes.
Yeah. My phone dies every time I go out in the cold.
Yes. And mine has started to die even when I have it in my pocket now. So I've literally been cramming it into my bra on every single ride.
And that's why I started wearing bras on my ride.
That is awesome.
No,
Picture didn't happen.
But
that's going to be the thumbnail, you guys. That's going to be the thumbnail.
Oh my God. My phone keeps dying, and then I can't tell Jen I'm coming home. And more importantly, if I were to have a problem, I couldn't tell Jen, dear God, please help me.
Not good.
Yeah. No.
Not a good situation.
Very not good.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I get legit worried when my phone's dead and I'm in the woods.
I think that's what we have for you today.
Yeah.
It boils down to sweat mitigation. There's a whole bunch of different things that you can do to, you know, kind of combat that.
Mm-hmm.
We would love to hear if you have anything specific that works for you, if you have any more questions off of that.
Especially in the area of, like, which bras to ride.
Yes.
Where, especially.
Yeah, that sounds like it'd be a good thing to hear from people about.
Yeah, if anyone actually has either figured out a way to stop the underboob sweat or found a bra that does not turn into a cold, sweaty ice band across your chest, please let us know. We would love to know that.
And I wouldn't.
Anthony does not care. I would love to know that. And if you have any other tips for, you know, what works for you on long rides, on getting through those first 15 minutes, that would be great as well.
Yeah.
So, do you guys have anything else for today?
No, I don't got another thing.
Nope.
Well, until next time, you can find us on Instagram at bottom.bracket.biking. And ride dirt, not mud.
Or slush.
Or
ride
slush.
Ride snow, not slush. Doo-doo.